Acts chapter 2. We're going to spend our time in Acts chapter 2 and invite your attention to it. In the morning Bible studies at 9:30, we're going to be dealing with the Acts chapter 2 passages, and especially the Pentecost event itself, which is the first four verses. And in the evenings, the chances that I get, we're going to be moving down into verse 25, down through verse 28. It's just an overwhelming, powerful passage, this whole Acts chapter 2. And thank you for bringing your Bibles so that we can get into it together. The context, of course, is very important. We're going to look at verse 25 tonight. Context is really important, really important. Over here on this side, I want to describe to you, paint a picture for you. I want you to view a room, a large room. It is the Old Covenant, Old Testament, Old Covenant. In this Old Covenant, Old Testament thing, which lasted for years and years and years, God is over there, I'm over here. And, of course, God is telling me what to do, and I'm desperately trying to do it. Of course, I can't meet up to that. I fail a lot. Don't look at me like that. So do you. So, God's over there, I'm over here, and I've got to pull this off. God came down on Mount Sinai, gave us this list of stuff, said, I'm a holy God, and I want you to be that way too. And so here's this list. Oh, good night, they added another one. And it just goes on and on. And I'm trying to pull this off. Who's responsible for pulling that off? Well, I am. Who's got to get this done? Well, I do. How am I going to get it done? Well, I got to get myself together, get my act together, pull this off, try harder, work harder. Well, come to Sunday school on time. Good night. What's wrong with you? Old covenant. Now, over here is the new covenant. New Testament. New covenant. The whole picture changes. The picture over here is God's not over there and I'm over here. God's in here. Do you have any idea? Well, sure you do. Do you have any idea the radical change that makes? That means that the whole sourcing thing has changed. See, over here, God's over there yelling at me and I'm trying to pull it off. That means I got to pull it off because I'm responsible. But in the new covenant, God's not over there yelling at me. He's come to be in here and he is sourcing me. So the way I'm getting this done now is not me, but him. So I'm not the source of this. He's come to do in me what I cannot do. The whole language changes then. The language over here, it's not the same language over here. See, over here, it's trying, striving, attempting, do better. Well, I'm doing my best. The language over here is not that at all. This is not about trying. This is not about striving. This is about relaxing. This is about surrendering. This is about yielding. This is not about my best. This is about his best. See, Christianity is no longer you doing your best. Because if it's your best, we're in trouble. We've seen your best, and it's just not too hot. So this is not about your best. So please set aside your best, would you please? And would you allow Jesus to do what you can't do? So over here in the Old Covenant, I'm trying, I'm attempting, I'm trying to pull this off. I'm doing the best I can. But over here, I'm relaxing, I'm surrendering, he's sourcing, I'm experiencing, and I'm beginning to live like I can't live. I'm being what I can't be. I'm feeling, knowing what I can't feel and know. I'm experiencing what I can't experience. I'm loving like I can't love. I'm even living above sin. And you know that's impossible. But it's happening. Well, it must not be me. It must be him. Because I never can discipline myself into that. Now, this new covenant is opened up for us by Jesus. He literally opened up a door. He literally made a door where there was no door. And invaded this whole new, set this whole new thing up for us. Ascended to the right hand of the Father and poured the Spirit out upon us. And this is taking place in Acts chapter 2, verse 1 through 4. It is a phenomenal occasion. Now, when this new covenant is established, 120 people get in on it for the very first time. And it's quite an occasion. There's a lot of things going on. You can read about it. But as this was going on in 120 people, there were 3,000 to 5,000 folks hanging around watching this whole thing. And they began to ask this question. They began to be moved by this new thing. They were seeing it. They were experiencing it. And they wonder what exactly was going on. So down in verse 12, you'll note that in their amazement, they begin to ask, whatever could this mean? There's a verb that's left out. about. It's the verb to be. It's not translated. So it's the actual statement is, whatever could this mean to be? In other words, how does this apply to my life? How could I get in on this? How could I experience this in my being? And if I experience this, exactly how would it work out? What would it mean in my life? Peter is moved upon by the Holy Spirit in verse 14, stands up and says, I'm going to explain it to you. And you know how he explains it? In the form of a sermon. Isn't that good news? And it goes clear down to verse 39, which means that's a long sermon, so long sermons are biblical. Woo! Isn't this exciting? Now, this sermon is just absolutely phenomenal, and it's all an explanation of what's going on in the new covenant. In other words, what is happening in Pentecost? What's happening in the 120? How does that apply to my life? Peter says, let me explain it to you. And he's going to explain the whole thing in the terms of a sermon. Every single phrase in the sermon is an explanation of Pentecost. That determines your interpretation of the passage. He's not going to talk about the second coming. He's not going to talk about the mode of baptism. He's talking about Pentecost. I want to explain to you what's going on in 120 people. His whole sermon is dedicated to that. His text, which opens up his sermon, is verse 17 down through verse 21, which is a quotation from Joel chapter 2, verse 28 and following. The opening statement of his sermon is verse 22. In fact, verse 22, 23, and 24 is one long sentence. Now, if you have the NIV, it probably divides it up. But it's really one long sentence. Typical preacher. So, he hardly takes a breath. And this is the opening statement of his explanation. It's what we in sermon construction call a proposition. The proposition of a sermon is the whole sermon reduced down to one sentence. And most people wish you'd give the one sentence and shut up, but we never do. So, here's the whole sermon given in one sentence. Everything he's going to say in all the rest of the sermon is all based on and spills out of that one single statement, verse 22, 23, and 24. Now, his explanation for Pentecost then is found in that sentence. Note in verse 22 how he begins this sentence. Men of Israel, hear these words, Jesus of Nazareth, a man. If you want to know the explanation for Pentecost, the explanation for Pentecost is Jesus of Nazareth, a man. Not Jesus of Nazareth, Son of God. Not Jesus of Nazareth, the Divine One. Not Jesus of Nazareth, the second member of the Trinity. Although he's all of those things. It's Jesus of Nazareth, a man. If you want to know what's going on in 120, he says, I'll be glad to explain it to you. What's going on in 120 and what they're experiencing is the same identical thing that was going on in the man called Jesus. Well, what was going on in a man called Jesus? He says, that's easy. Look at verse 22. Jesus of Nazareth, a man proven by God to you by miracles, wonders, and signs, which God did through him. Jesus was sourced by God. His life is emphasized in verse 22. His death is emphasized in verse 23. His resurrection is emphasized in verse 24. So life, death, and resurrection of Jesus was all sourced by God. How did Jesus live? Oh, the Father lived through him. How did he die? Oh, the Father died through him. How did he raise from the dead? Oh, the Father raised him from the dead. Everything that was going on in the life of Jesus was sourced by the Father. Jesus didn't do anything he did because he's God, although he is God. But that's not how he did what he did. He did what he did because he was a man filled with God. So the whole life of Jesus is explained in terms of, whoa, God has come to indwell a man, the new covenant. Nobody had ever seen anybody like this. Jesus is the first one. Now 120 have got it. And oh, guess what? It's promised to you. You can have it too. The same identical sourcing. So you can relive the life of Jesus in your day. Wow. That excited you. So his explanation for Pentecost is Jesus. Now when he got done preaching that, he looked at the crowd and they look about like you. So he saw that they had questions on their faces. There was a reaction happening. You see it in verse 25, which brings us to our verse. For David says concerning him. The Greek word for is the Greek word gar, G-A-R, gar. It's a causative particle, and it assumes a reaction. In other words, he's preaching, he looks at the crowd and sees a reaction coming from them. They have questions, but you can't interrupt the sermon. Put your hand down. So you can't interrupt the sermon. So he decides, I'll just assume what their questions are, and I'll answer those questions before they ask them. Now, what kind of questions would they have? Well, if what's going on in 120 is the plan of God, and if what's going on in 120, which is the new thing God is doing, and if what's going on in 120 is what God was doing in Jesus, oh brother, we messed with that big time. We nailed him. So we're in trouble. And even if we could, I don't know that we can, but even if we could get into this, even though we've messed with the plan, even if we got into it, how could we experience it? How could we maintain it? What would it be? And he sees these questions. He says, I want to answer those questions for you. And he begins by answering them in terms of, I want to let Jesus answer them himself. So we're going to have Jesus come, he said, and testify. He quotes a messianic psalm. So verse 25 down through verse 28 is a quotation from David, a psalm from David, which is a messianic psalm, which means it's all about Jesus, not about David. So when you read this psalm, it's as if Jesus is standing there and his lips are parting and he's speaking this. So this is the testimony of Jesus about what was going on inside of him as the Father sourced him. So Jesus is going to give his own testimony. So when Peter sees the reaction of the crowd, he says, I want to answer your questions, and I'm not going to answer it out of my background. Because if I answer it out of my background, my upbringing, you'll say, well, my dad dropped me twice on my head, so it doesn't apply to me. So I'm not going to answer it out of my background, because I've had a different background than you. So let's forget about backgrounds. Well, I'm not going to answer it, he says, out of my education, because you'll say, well, I didn't go to Asbury Seminary, so that doesn't apply to me. I'm not going to talk about education. This is not coming from education, he says. I'm not going to answer it from my background. Not going to answer it from my education. Not going to answer it from my church culture, because you have it different than I do. We're pushing all that aside tonight. He says, I want to bring Jesus in here, and I want him to answer this question himself. And he quotes this psalm. Now here is Jesus' testimony about Pentecost, verse 25. I foresaw the Lord always before my face, for he is at my right hand that I may not be shaken. Whoa. Isn't that awesome? Start at the beginning again. I foresaw the Lord always before my face. Let's tackle that. Over here on this side, we're going to place, I foresaw the Lord. Over on this side, we're going to put, always before my face. I foresaw the Lord. Always before my face. This is the content of this. If you say, I foresaw the Lord, what does that mean? Always before my face. Always before my face is the explanation for the beginning of this sentence. So let's start over here. Always before my face. Now, reach in, grab a hold of the word my, pull it out. Before face, squeeze it together. Before face, that's a translation of one Greek word. The prefix of this one Greek word is in. They translated it before, but it's the Greek word in, which is equivalent to in. See, there's three little words that you use one of them in every sentence. They're really simple. In, into, and from. Same way in the Greek language. There's one of them used in nearly every sentence. In, into, and from. From is motion. He came from outside, meaning he was out there, now he's in here. Into is motion. Motion. He came into the room, meaning he was out there, now he's in. Motion. From is motion. Into is motion, but in, no motion. In fact, in is the remaining idea. In is the settled idea. In is the no movement idea. Isn't it interesting when the Bible comes to emphasize the idea of God actually indwelling mankind? It's the N word. Christ in you. Not coming into you, not going out of you. In, son, no motion. Settledness, remaining, the abiding concept. In. That's the first part. That's the prefix of always before, before my face. So over here you got before face. In is the prefix. No motion. The Greek word for face, the root word, is the idea of the area around the eye. In the Hebrew language, they had no word for presence. So in the Old Testament, they could not say, I'm in the presence of God. So what they said was, I'm in His face. This is out of the Old Testament. So they held on to that translation. Again, the word is the area around the eye. So it's literally in my eye. So a literal translation would be, Jesus is testifying. And he'd say, oh, I want to tell you about Pentecost. And you know what's going on in Pentecost in 120? Oh, he says, it's the same thing that's going on in me. And if you want to know what's going on in me, oh, the Father's in my eye. It's a focus thing. The Father's in my eyeball. Everywhere I look, I can't see anything but the Father. Everywhere I look, I see nothing but Him. And every situation in my life, He's in the middle of it. Everything that's going on, somehow He is there. Everywhere I look, He's the lens through which I see everything. I can't go anyplace, look at anything without seeing it through the Father Himself. He's the center point around which my whole life revolves. He's the hub of my very system. He's the existence of my very being. The Father has become so real. The Father has gotten, and I have gotten so tight. There's such an intimacy going on between us that the Father's literally coloring my whole objective, coloring the way I see everything. He's in my eyeball. The whole focus of my life is all wrapped up in the Father. It's the Father. It's the Father and more of the Father. He is the focus of my life. I'm trying to explain Pentecost to you. What's going on in 120? That's easy. Same thing that was going on in Jesus. What's going on in Jesus? Oh, the Father was in His eyeball. He couldn't see anything except the Father. Now, it's interesting that the word always is coupled with that. Always in my eye. Normally, when you translate from one language to another, it takes two or three English words to translate one Greek word or whatever language you're translating. But once in a while, not very often, but once in a while, that will be reversed. Instead of one Greek word and two or three English words, there'll be two Greek words translated into one English word. That's the way the word always is. It's awesome. So always is two distinct Greek words. Through is the first word. And entire and whole is the second word. So what is he saying? All the time Jesus is being sourced by the Father, during that whole time, always, during that whole time, guess what was going on? Father was in his eye. So all the time Jesus is being sourced by the Father's in his eye. All the time the Father's in his eye, Jesus is being sourced by the Father. Now, is it that Jesus is being sourced by the Father, therefore the Father's in his eye? Or is it the Father's in his eye, therefore he's being sourced by the Father? The answer is yes. They go together. You can't have one without the other. If you're going to be sourced by God, the Father's going to be in your eye. Your focus is going to be, oh, it's the concentration of your life. If you're going to be sourced by the Father, He's going to be in your eye. If He's in your eye, how could you not be sourced by the Father? So Peter says, are you following? Peter says, I want to give you the next. You ask, what does this have to do with my life? How does this enter into my being? You want to know what's going on in 120, what this new room is, what this indwelling of God in your life is like. Hey, he says, I'll give you the answer. It's all about Jesus. Jesus was sourced by the Father in His life, death, and resurrection. That confuses you, so I'll let Jesus come and testify Himself. And Jesus starts out by saying, oh, it's the focus of my life. Father's in my heart. Now go to the next statement, verse 25. He is at my right hand. He is, verb of being, state of being. Not action, no movement, state of being. In fact, you remember the Moses thing in the burning bush. And Moses says, what's your name, God? I am that I am. Same Greek word. It's the I am thing. I am the bread of life. That's the word. I am, state of being. Not action, no movement, state of being. In other words, if the Father's in my eye, He is. Not the action of the Father in my eye. It's not the movement of the Father that's attracted my attention. It's not, oh, the Father is necessary for me to have victory. That's not what He's talking about. Jesus is not saying, well, the Father moves in such dynamic deliverance that no, that hasn't gotten my attention. It isn't the Father's great miracles. That isn't what's got my attention. It's the Father Himself. What's grabbed my attention, what's come to get in my eye, what's literally got my whole focus, which is literally the source of my very being, is the Father Himself. Not the doctrine of the Father, not the concept of the Father, not the facsimile of the Father, not the statue of the Father, not the church organization of the Father, not the program of the Father, the Father, not the camp meeting of the Father Himself. He's gotten in my eye. Now, it's very significant, the next statement. Verse 25. For He is, state of being, at my right hand. Now, that's language. That language in the ancient world was bodyguard language. At my right hand was bodyguard stuff. Your bodyguard was always at your right hand. Easy to tell you why. Because the bodyguard is standing here, I'm standing there. The bodyguard covers me with his shield and can defend me with his sword. He's at my right hand. If I'm standing on this side, if the bodyguard's standing on this side, he can cover me with the shield, but you got a problem. So the bodyguard is at, and the word at is from, which is motion. You said there was no motion. I know. Well, is there or isn't there? There isn't. See, that's the phenomenal thing about God. He moves without moving. Gets things done without doing them. It's the phenomenal essence of His very being. He is. The essence of who He is, literally, is the defend. He's my defender, not because He acts, but because He is. So what is Jesus saying? Oh, the Father's in my eye, and all the time He's in my eye, He is defending me. The very essence of His presence defends me. Again, it's the Father. I want you to get this. It's the Father Himself. Not the belief of the Father, not the doctrine of the Father, not the activity of the Father, not the program of the Father Himself. Oh, it's in my eye. And His presence literally defends me. You remember the story of Jesus at age 12. They were from Nazareth, and a whole bunch of them got together every year, and they go camping and make the 10-day trip or 5 to 10-day trip down to Jerusalem for the religious festivities. They came and when Jesus was 12, all the camp out, all the families had a big time. Then they went back. And when they had camped that first night on their return trip, you know the story well, on their return trip, they couldn't find Jesus. They left Him in Jerusalem. They're all upset. They do the best they can to sleep that night. Crack of dawn, they go back. So they went out one day. Then they turned around and came back to Jerusalem. That's 2 days they've missed Him. Then it says they searched for him for 3 days. That's 5 days they've been without their son. At the end of the 3 days, they went to the temple. And you can just surmise that the reason they went to the temple was to pray. They search everywhere, can't find him for 3 days. They go to the temple to pray. When they go to the temple, there he is. And they pulled the typical parent thing. They ran up to him and said, "Why?" This is a direct quote. "Why have you done this to us?" And Jesus turned to them and said something like this. "You've been looking for me for 3 days. Where have you been looking? Did you come into town and say, 'Oh, I know where Jesus will be, the adult bookstore. I bet he snuck in the back door.' Did you come into Jerusalem and say, 'I know where he'll be, down at that bar. He's probably got a fake ID and it's probably...'" Where have you been looking? Why wouldn't you walk into town and immediately say, "I know where he'll be, temple"? Then he gave the statement that you can quote. "Don't you know I must be about my Father's business?" Here's the interesting thing. In the original language of the Scriptures, the Greek language, the word "business" isn't there. What he said was, "I must be about my Father." Why did we put "business" in there? Oh, come on. You know why we did. Because, folks, that's what we're all about, is the business. The business, brother, the business. Let's get down to business, man. Business, business, business. See, I'm all about the business. I'm spiritual, religious business, man. I'm talking big business. I'm talking about, hey, let's have that board meeting. Build that building. Let's get this business done. I'm telling, let's get down. Hey, how about those budgets? Who's going to take that offer? How are we going to? Who's going to? Let's get this. Go, go. And then, see, it's all about business, business. Boy, am I tired. Business. See, I'm all about the preaching business, man. The schedule business. Who's going to, and how are we going to, and how long's the sermon? The business, business. We got to have the singing. Get the choir going. Let's get the praise group. Let's get, where's the band? Let's business, 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 business. I've been about the Sunday school business. I've been about the youth program business. Who's going to buy the pizza? The business. Jesus wasn't about the business. He was just about the, oh. See, it wasn't the doctrine of the Father. It wasn't the facsimile of the Father. It wasn't the statue of the Father. It wasn't the theology of the Father. See, I've been all about the theology, man. I can arm wrestle your theology. But for Jesus, it wasn't about the theology of the Father. It wasn't about the program of the Father. It wasn't about the church organization of the Father. It wasn't about the budgets of the Father. It was just about the... Whoa. And isn't it interesting for Jesus... when he was all wrapped up in the Father, the business got done. He tried to teach that to some people like Mary and Martha. You remember that story, don't you? Mary's in the kitchen. Or Martha's in the kitchen. Cooking the dinner. Jesus is coming. She's getting things ready. She's worked like a dog, clean up the house. She's getting in the kitchen to prepare his favorite meal. Mary, she just gets up out of bed when Jesus shows up. Walks into the living room. There's Jesus sitting in the chair, plops down at his feet, and boy, that she's there. Martha's in the kitchen working like a dog. And finally, she gets to a pot and a pan. She brings it out to the doorway. Wham! That'll get Mary's attention. But she's just sitting there focusing on Jesus. And Martha's out there saying, "Well, bless God, if no, if I didn't do the cooking, we'd never eat around here. I have to peel the potatoes." Can you hear? You know what Jesus' response to that whole thing was? That Mary has chosen the one thing. And I used to say, well, yeah, it's true. I mean, if we didn't have somebody to peel the potatoes, we never would eat around here. Somebody's got to do the business. Listen, dinner was never a problem for Jesus. Just 5,000 are fed. No problem. See, Jesus never had a problem. I don't think you're buying this. Isn't it interesting that he can get more done in 15 seconds than I can pull off in 15 years? And we work our fingers to the bone when if... trying to explain Pentecost to you. What's going on in 120? Oh, that's easy. Same thing that was going on in Jesus. Well, what was going on in Jesus of Nazareth, the man? Oh, he was being sourced by the Father. And all the time he was being sourced by the Father was in his eye. Not the facsimile of the Father, not the program of the Father, not the theology of the Father, just the Father. The Father himself. And Jesus was, whoa. Now look at the last statement. This is so awesome. That, last statement, that I may not be shaken. That purpose clause. What's the purpose of all of this? Jesus is sourced by the Father. The Father's in his eye. What's the purpose? That. And the purpose is, I may not be shaken. Shaken is the word for waver, distracted. So it's the idea that the Father's come to be in his eye so that Jesus will not ever get distracted. Isn't that an irritating thing about Jesus? He was always, that's so irritating. He was always sourced by the Father. Every time you saw him, he was sourced by the Father. His whole life was all the time. I mean, his good days, bad days. When he's walking on the water, sourced by the Father. You hang him on a cross, sourced by the Father. Bring him to a Garden of Gethsemane, sourced by the Father. You have the crowd applauding, want to make him king, sourced by the Father. Every time you see the man, it doesn't matter what the circumstances are, he's just sourced by the Father. You'd think he'd mess up once and be self-sourced. How could you be like that? Oh, he was disciplined. No, that isn't what it says. How could he consistently be sourced by the Father? Because, he says, the Father was in his eye and was his bodyguard, defending him from all the distractions. So it was the Father who sourced him. It was the Father who focused him. It was the Father who kept him from distractions. Oh, you didn't get it. Let me give it to you again. Let me tell you a story. This guy goes to college. And when he's in college, he sees her. Oh, she's gorgeous. Oh, what's her name? Where's she from? What year is she? What classes is she taking? I want to sign up. Do you know her? Can you introduce me to her? He's just all wrapped up. I've got to get. So now that he's seen her, he wants to be with her. So he sets it up. He gets introduced to her. They drink a Coke. He sets up a date. Now they've got a date. And of course, now that he's got one date, he wants another date. And then he's texting her. Then he's calling her. See, the more he sees her, the more he wants to see her. The more he loves her, the more he loves her. The more he wants to see her. And the more he wants to see her, the more he sees her. And the more he sees her, the more he loves her. And the more he loves her, the more he wants to see her. And the more he wants to see her, the more he sees her. And the more he sees her, the more he loves her. And the boy's just being sucked in. See, you don't go and say, concentrate, son, concentrate, concentrate. Well, you don't have to say that. See, the boy is just... See, that's exactly what's going on here. See, Jesus is being sourced by the Father. The Father's in His eye. And the more Jesus sees the Father, the more He loves Him. And the more He loves Him, the more He sees Him. And the more He sees Him, the more He loves Him. And the more He loves Him, the more He sees Him. And He's just being sucked in! And the secret to the distractions is that the Father Himself in the eye of Jesus is pulling Jesus into His presence and just pulling Him into the intimacy and pulling Him into the wonder of His being, and the distraction is falling off. The amazing thing is Jesus is big enough to pull that off in your life. Trying to explain Pentecost to you. What's going on in 120? Oh, that's easy. Same thing that was going on in Jesus. What's going on in Jesus? Oh, He was a man sourced by God. What is that like? Oh, the Father's in His eye. His total focus, His intimacy, all wrapped up in not the program of the Father, not the church of the Father, not the doctrine of the Father. The Father Himself is in His eye. In fact, the more He sees Him, the more He loves Him. And the more He loves Him, the more He sees Him. And Jesus is just sucked in until the Father Himself just keeps Him from all the distractions that would bring Him down. Wow, Jesus, could You do that in my life? Could you and I get together in such intimacy? Could this go be way beyond doctrine and theology? Could this go way beyond religious activities? God, I'm so tired of religion. I'm tired of counting beads and lighting candles. Could I actually get so intimate with You? Could You actually so fill me? Could I actually see You as You are? Could You and I get so tight? Could You just literally captivate me? Could You actually be in my eye? Could I just, could I see You as You are until then the intimacy of Your person, everything else would fade? Lord, could this be the answer to every need of my life? Could this be the solution to every problem I've got? Could this be the answer to temptation? Would this bring me into holiness? Would this bring me into the life experience of victory? Father, we've lived in an old covenant. We've lived in the trying, the doing, and we've lived in the living my life for You. Instead of letting You live Your life through us, we've lived in the struggle instead of the relaxation. Would you come in the wonder of Yourself? Could you capture us tonight? Could You give us a group of young people who would actually be captured by Your person, not the ideas about You, not the stimulating program for You? Could they be captured by You and You alone? Could You get in my eye? Heads are bowed. I've spent most of my life about the business. Oh, it was all for Him, you understand. I did it all for Him. But I've been about the business. When it should have been about Him and Him alone. And you know how I know that? Because you see, when it's about the business and people don't respond the way I want them to, I get all upset. When I planned the Sunday school party and they didn't come, it just makes me mad. I work like a dog and they didn't. Why? Because I'm all about the business. See, I know we're about the business because the church fights and the church splits tell me we're about the business. The divisions tell me we're about the business. I need to get on my knees tonight and come back to Him. And if I could see Him as He is, oh, the more I see Him, the more I'd love Him, and the more I'd love Him, the more I'd see Him, and the more I see Him, the more I'd love Him. And could you be captured by Him tonight? Young person, the whole secret to what you're looking for is found in His person. Our altar's open tonight. Moments of response. I want to kneel. I want to focus. You aren't going to sit there in that pew tonight, are you? And try to convince me you haven't been about the business. Way too much about the business. Rather than Him. Anybody want to see Him clearer tonight? Moments of seeking. Be obedient. Altar's open.